This edition of Nation Talk is being brought to you by Scotiabank. Respecting your past, trusting your future. Think what we can achieve together. Hi, and welcome to another edition of Nation Talk. On March 12th in Vancouver at the Fairmont Waterfront Hotel, the Canadian Council for Aboriginal Business will be hosting another of its Hot Topic series focusing on the William case. The expert panel will cover the implications of the June 2014 ruling by the Supreme Court of Canada, granting 1,700 square kilometers of land in British Columbia to the Tahltan First Nation. The unanimous decision from this case establishes a precedent for both future and outstanding claims by determining Aboriginal title over land and whether or not provincial laws apply. The decision written by Chief Justice Beverly McLaughlin also has implications for economic and resource development on First Nations land. And here with us today, we have Miles with us on Nation Talk. Miles, thank you very much for joining us here today.
Good morning, Andre.
Will there be a floodgate of Aboriginal title litigation?
I think that First Nations have been trying for the last 150 years to negotiate and implement treaties across this country. There hasn't been much will on the Crown side. Increasingly, the courts have clarified that Aboriginal title does exist. And Aboriginal title exists in this country substantially in the way First Nations have seen it. So if the Crown becomes willing to negotiate title, First Nations would probably have a big interest in going back to those tables and implementing them. I think First Nations should remain to have that expectation, as should Canadians. But I think increasingly, First Nations are going to define their own title and go forward and assert it. And I think that's where industry should see the opportunity.
What are the implications of the Chilcotin decision on Aboriginal industry and economic partnerships?
Well, just like I was saying, that in the past, First Nations have largely worked out agreements about land tenure and seed jurisdictions with the Crown, and then approached industry. That hasn't been always fruitful for First Nations when the Crown hasn't been willing. I think there's going to be an increasing tendency for First Nations to define their title, to define their jurisdictions in terms of land use and marine, and go forward and do agreements with industry where there's a willing partner. And I think industry would be well advised to take this opportunity very seriously.
Will there be a greater understanding by the outside business community that they will be taking and negotiating directly and primarily with First Nations?
I think that's going to be an increasing tendency, as I'm saying. You know, the Crown must continue to assert their jurisdiction and are going to continue to attempt to assert a heavy hand in those relationships. That's to be expected, but First Nations have really clearly got their own standing in terms of title and their own standing in terms of their governance authority, despite the Crown's intransigence. If the Crown suddenly decided to want to respect the law of this country, if they suddenly decided to want to come forward and recognize the substantial rights and title that First Nations continue to possess. Like, remember, these are continuing from ancient history. They're not grants from the Crown or anyone. That there's opportunities here to come to terms with this.
Are there any other examples of this kind of legislation or court rulings anywhere else in the world that deals with Indigenous peoples?
You'd better ask a lawyer that. I'm not sure. I kind of keep a close eye on Canada and my part of the world.
Fully understandable. So where does it go from here, and how can we build stronger, more effective economic partnerships with this?
Well, I think that's exactly what the business of the National Consortium of Indigenous Economic Development is, based in the University of Victoria, in the Law School, and the Gustafson School of Governance. What our mandate is to pull together First Nations and their constituent communities and to build on-the-ground partnerships with industry, you know, larger agglomerations of industry or larger companies, those that are interested, and federal and provincial governments where there's an interest. And I believe that there's an interest in that side from looking at these issues more seriously. At the consortium, we're going to pull those three groups together, try to find some common ground and try to find a way forward. And in the process, we're going to do some research to further these initiatives. We're going to do some compilation of best practices across this country and, in fact, around the world, and find and offer as much as we can, develop relevant and responsive learning in a supportive environment. Not only do First Nation entrepreneurs, individual business people, need encouragement and support and capacity building, but so do First Nations at the nation level, the regional level, and at the community level. These are really important elements of developing constructive and productive relations and building on to more efficient and effective economies. And it's a big task. And at the National Consortium for Indigenous Economic Development, we're very excited about contributing to that.
Now, do you think that the communications of the Williams case, do you think that the average Canadian understands what the implications of this are or what the potentials of this are? Or do you see the NCIED as possibly being a great opportunity to get the proper messaging out?
Well, the NCIED will be one group that will work to get the proper messaging out. I participate in another group called Canadians for a New Partnership, which is ex-prime ministers, ex-national chiefs, ex-captains of industry, and a whole bunch of people who have a lot of time on their hands and really want to see a Canada evolve that includes First Nations as we see ourselves. And groups like that, NCIED and you know, 1,000 more across the country need to get this word out. Because ignorance of Aboriginal entitlement, of the true fundamental rights of Indigenous people, is one of the main problems. And I remember when I was Chief Commissioner of the BC Treaty Commission, our communications team would often say to me as Chief Commissioner that our task in educating people about Indigenous rights was a bit like boiling the ocean. It's a huge task, but you know, the integrity of Canada depends on it. Our commitment and our respect for the rule of law in this country depends on it. Remember, Canada is founded on two basic democratic tenets. One, the democratic principle, one person, one vote. But that is necessarily tempered by the rule of law, where minorities in the population can ensure that their rights are not going to be stampeded by the tyranny of the majority. That's exactly what's happening and what's always happened with Aboriginal rights, with Indigenous entitlement, right from the beginning of the relationship. And the courts have increasingly upheld First Nations leaders' persistent and consistent view of this title, only to find governments that aren't interested in honoring what the courts have said. And, you know, First Nations have not had the capacity up till now to implement this. I think this court case, where the courts are at now, and it's been an evolution with the Williams case, are beginning to change that mix. But the only long-term solution is to have Canadians understand the fundamental and the broad rights of First Nations.
Wow. And on that very exciting note, Miles Richardson, I want to say thank you very much for joining us here today on Nation Talk. Miles Richardson, one of the esteemed panelists on the panel on March 12th in Vancouver at the CCAB Hot Topics on the William case. Thank you very much. Chi-miigwech to you, and have a great day.
This edition of Nation Talk has been brought to you by Scotiabank. Respecting your past, trusting your future. Think what we can achieve together.